This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, August 10th, 2022, and looking at a market that's starting to roll over. As you can see on slide two, the S&P 500 chart we chose today, rolling over after sort of nearly touching that prior pivot from early June around the 4,200 level. Didn't quite make it there, and now we are rolling over. If you put up a classic momentum study, it'll show it already in descent there. And I think interesting, Peter, on the baskets we tracked, our equity theme baskets, you can see on the table on the right there, some of the former sort of hero sectors and themes were the dogs yesterday. We saw a pretty ugly rollover in things like crypto and blockchain, green transformation, et cetera. So what's your take on this market?
Well, that we are likely rolling over. I mean, I don't think the medium term narrative here, I think, is still very much uncertain. This whole idea that we can engineer a soft landing, I think, is the most critical narrative to fight over. And I think the CPI print we get today in the U.S. will tell us much more about what is going to happen, because I think it's all about this pricing of what the Fed will do next year. And it's, you're right about the themes. It's the we've seen tremendous amount of volatility in some of these themes baskets, bubble stocks, and now semiconductors were very weak yesterday because of Micron. We'll get back to that. And then green transformation, I think, is a little bit odd given the big climate deal that was done in the U.S. or energy and climate deal, because there was a lot of money on the table for that part of the market. And then of course commodities were back into being the hero trade as well. And I think that's an interesting lead-in into the CPI report today.
Yeah, so on slide three, just putting up for longer-term perspective, one of you put in that lower right chart, which is the very long-term perspective back to the 1970s, I think greatly shows how the regime was back then, with these very high prints month on month, and then such a long period of decades where things were muted and there was a total regime shift during that period. If we are in a new regime, I think I think it's very likely that the market's expectations will be foiled in coming months. This assumption that the Fed is set for peak rates in December, one more 75 basis point hike in September, a deceleration and some sort of normalcy. I think there's this strong belief that we're going to return, that prior regime of decades of low CPI is provides some sort of gravity that we're going to be attracted back down towards. If we're in a new regime, driven by the themes we've discussed, especially underinvestment on the supply side and commodities and deglobalization, then there's a huge wake-up call for those that set of expectations. This has absolutely nothing to do, it must be emphasized, on what a random single one-month print might be. But I think the risk for the cycle is this moment of discovery that we are going to stay in this regime. So
we need to add something else. I think it was Polestar was out with this Credit Suisse money market analyst, which is very well written by a lot of people. He was out also, highlighting the fact that when you are in a warlike environment, whether you call it a cold war or a hot war or whatever, a proxy war, and depending, of course, of the scale, that also tends to be inflationary in itself. And I think that is also a great point, because we are. Definitely in that type of environment as well.
Yeah, the risk of the ongoing showdown and confrontation. And again, that's all part of the whole deglobalization anyway, as a part of an integral part of that, disentanglement of our systems. But just for a perspective, we are expecting the 0.5% print for today, which would be the lowest in 4 months. As you can see there on the left of that chart on slide three, the black showing the month-on-month prints of above 0.5% and all the way to 0.7. So I think, in other words, the big surprise side, given the market expectations for a dip back to 0.5, would be just another print that's 0.6 or even higher, I think might spook this market and get us back into more volatile mode. We could see higher yields, higher dollar, and lower risk sentiment. And I just popped in for perspective, a little item there. I think it's so critical, this ongoing supposed transition to electric vehicles. Ford raising the price of their F-150 Lightning, their EV version of the best-selling pickup truck in America, by $8,500 due to significant material cost increases. Interesting story there, certainly not leading to lower inflation in that particular sector. Let's turn it over to you, Peter, just for perspective. You've got a longer term perspective here as well on the equity market and real returns.
Yeah, because we put out a note yesterday on what you can do if you're a typical equity retail investor and to do risk reduction. And the final section of that note was basically about the risk from inflation. That's often not talked about. We always talk about diversification risk and limiting the downside risk, etc. But the inflation risk is a real risk this time around, and we're down somewhere between 20 and 25% in inflation adjusted terms when you look at the MSCI USA index in total return terms. And I've highlighted the two big drawdowns in real wealth terms in US equity markets. And the first one was from in the 70s, lasting well into the 80s. It lasted for 13 years. And then we had the from the peak of the dot-com into the on the other side of the euro crisis, that took 14 years to close that gap. And I just put it in out here for perspective because, I mean, if we're grinding at the current inflation level, just maybe at 5 or 6%, it really takes a lot of the steam out of equities, and it will take a lot longer for it to get back in terms of real returns. And it's just something really important to have in mind. And I highlight, and that's maybe a lead into you, Ole, because the only thing that can really help us when you have a supply constraint driven inflation environment, of course, is commodities.
Yeah, what do you say to that, Ole? I mean, we have, and I'm really curious whether this re-engages as a driver for inflation. There's a lot of attention on the leading edge of what many see as the leading edge of headline inflation. That is the energy market, really not going in a productive direction yet in any material way, and natural gas, a really critical import in the U.S., as we've emphasized. But crude oil, as we're also talking about, it's getting about as cheap as it maybe can, unless we're going to see some very significant economic slowdown and demand collapse.
Indeed, John, because basically we are still in this situation where the supply side is equally struggling, but the focus recently has been on the demand side, and especially the numbers from the US, which is showing a demand for gasoline has eased somewhat over the past few weeks. That also leads us into today's EIA report. I just had a few data here on slide 7, and the bottom right chart that's showing the motor gas supply. You can see how we diverged away from the trend in recent years, and that really will attract some attention. But overall, the cost of energy going forward is unlikely to come down in any significant way. Crude oil remains, I think we're close to a bottom here. We see what's going on in the gas market. We see what's going on in the coal market due to increased demand as a substitution for gas. So generally, the energy input into the economy is likely to remain elevated for the foreseeable future. And later on in the week, we may get some further news on the agricultural space. We got the WASDE report coming out on Friday, just highlighting the specs expectations for yields in the US this year of the main crops, but also we get some highlights about what's going on in Europe and Russia, Ukraine. The weather has clearly been a major challenge this year. And then on the industrial metals, really the sector that started the sell-off in commodities back in March, we've seen some tentative signs of recovery recently, and potentially leading us to believe that we also may have seen some of the low points there. But obviously the market is focusing primarily today on the CPI print and the impact and ramification for the direction and the speed of US interest rate hikes.
Yeah, let's look at that. A couple of charts on that, because that will bear very significantly on the price of gold. But just to round out the CPI reaction, I mean, the dollar pair is almost across the board, just sort of gone into this really pivotal neutral area and limbo, if you will, looking for direction. It feels like the market is really struggling to find inspiration here. And I think if it is to find inspiration, it will likely find it from incoming data and moves in the treasury yield. So we've talked a lot about euro dollar frozen in that range. Aussie dollars in a similar, if more volatile situation, as I show on slide 5. It sort of rejected the new set of lows below 68 there back in mid-July. Rallied towards the 70 level, a very pivotal chart point, by the way, stretching back years really, and it hasn't really managed to take out that level. So locally, a little bullish reversal from after trying to react to the strong U.S. jobs data, it rejected that reaction. Now, how are we going to react to the CPI data and that 0.70 level? Really critical stuff. So Let's see what happens there. As you can see, the trend readings on our FX board are very, very low. There's virtually nothing above two on an absolute basis, except for the precious metals. Which segue to you, Ola, we've really been challenging this really critical area. Nominally, the 1780 was the focus, as that's where we saw some intraday lows. But it looks to me like on a closing basis, it's really all about 1800 there.
Yeah, it looks that way. We had a brief look at 1800 yesterday, looking at spot gold. The futures is obviously trading at a higher level, but we got rejected. And we also mentioned yesterday that the reason the engine behind the recovery in metals in general has been silver and copper. Silver has put in quite a strong outperformance. Copper has bounced from the lows, but both of these metals also just ran into some has been running into resistance. Copper at around that 360 level, which we're struggling to break, and silver also just paring back some gains. So with that in mind, gold is still just holding here below 1800, as you can see on charts on slide six here. If you do take out that 1803 level, that could indicate that we may start to have some fresh air towards that 1878 level from the high back in June. But it's a market that it's a strong recovery from the lows, so we probably need a bit more consolidation. And today's CPI print obviously will be very, very important. And I'll just highlight as well on that slide the difference between current inflation levels and where the market expects inflation to be in 1, 2, and 5 years out. And obviously you can see there's quite a significant expectation for a drop in inflation just in 1 year, down towards that 3.5 level. So it's a tall order to satisfy the market with with their future inflation expectations. So that obviously could be a significant input to gold price if the market start to believe that that inflation target cannot be reached, and we are going to have high inflation for longer. So all to play for, so to say, in today's number. But generally, seems like we found at least found a decent plateau here to from where they're trying to build.
Yeah, very interesting on gold because of that assumption of a return to normality for CPI. If once that unanchoring occurs, if and when it occurs, that's when the gold story reoccurs, if you will, something we're all looking for eventually. Coffee, let's have a brief roundup of coffee before we get back to equities.
Exactly. We have, just like all the other commodities, seen a correction in the coffee market. It has been happening despite some pretty unpleasant news coming out of Brazil. We had the drought and the frost last year, which were already expected to lower the production this year. Now we actually start to see the real production results coming in, and the crop is lower than what the market has anticipated. So just looking at some of the fundamental data, I sent it out this chat out on the tweet earlier as well today as well. This is just not telling me the a market that should go down. We got the backwardation, basically the sign of the tightness in the market at near the highest level since 2010. So that's the spread, the 1 year spread between the front futures and the 1 year out. It's above 6%. Look, for almost a decade we traded with in the contango, which was basically killing any attempt to go long in the market. Right now you actually have some tailwind from that curve structure. At the same time, warehouse held stocks at warehouses monitored by the ICE Futures Exchange has hit the lowest levels in 23 years, and speculators have cut their longs by 70%. So just generally a market where I think, just like many of the other commodity markets, where the underlying fundamentals remain very strong. It's really only the worry that we hit a recession and we start to drink less coffee. I think actually if we hit a recession, I'll drink more coffee, but that's another story. So underlying strength in the coffee is basically the takeaway from this chart here.
Yeah, I've never noticed much of a change in any of my coffee behaviors in ups or downs. So,
Exactly.
okay. All right, Peter, we've got a lot going on in the semiconductor space. There was also this story, the Taiwanese Foxconn, the massive Taiwanese semiconductor manufacturer, a producer, and I guess they're also assemblers of devices, a huge company and involved in Apple's infrastructure and getting their devices produced, being told by the Taiwanese security officials to drop their investment in a Chinese mainland producer. I think it's called Tsinghua Unigroup. Interesting story there, but that's elsewhere also the focus is in terms of profitability. We talked about Nvidia, and now it seems to be Micron. I don't know if there's a theme here.
Well, with the semiconductors have been a theme all along, right? Because we had the supply constraints, and now there are areas of the semiconductor industry where maybe supply is not the issue any longer, but more demand that is coming down. And I think Micron is more important than Nvidia. I think Nvidia was very much a crypto related slash a little bit of gaming related story, where Micron Technology, being one of the largest memory chip manufacturers, and memory chip goes into everything consumer electronics related. So I think this is a more broad based, more macro important backdrop and story. And Foxconn, I think, is just is what to expect, because the US Chips Act, we could have talked much more about it. It is a huge deal. It will force Taiwanese, Japanese, South Korean manufacturers to pick side, and there's a lot of money on the table from the U.S. government if you enter into this program. But it requires that you don't do any investments in China unless you do 28 or less nanometer tubes for your semiconductors. So it's the game has changed basically. And I think the biggest takeaway from the Micron report yesterday was actually that the CEO was out saying that the U.S. Chips Act will make the U.S. a chip leader by 2025. That's a pretty aggressive timeline, but it's also the aggressiveness you need given the seriousness of the situation. So I think that was an interesting comment. And then we have Vestas reporting earnings here in Europe early morning. They miss on revenue and operating profit for Q2. The revenue growth outlook is quite wide. The estimate sitting in the middle of that range they have provided. And then, of course, cost pressures is still the key challenge for Vestas, that you use a lot of steel and carbon materials, etc., and copper for these products. So and then Tesla, Elon Musk have sold $7.2 billion worth of shares. In a statement via tweet, he said yesterday that it's due to maybe if he's forced to do an acquisition of Twitter in this court case in Delaware, that he wants to avoid any avoid any what's it called, John? It's a last minute. I think he called it a last minute sale of shares that could really push the share price if it's not controlled. I just have to say that $7.2 billion worth of shares is nothing relative to the daily trading range. So I think that's a stretch in terms of argument. I think he wants to take some chips off the table. I think the EV game is really heating up in terms of competition. I think if you look at what's happening in China, it's incredible. The number of players and prices, the price pressure, and Tesla is also being pressured here in Europe from a lot of local manufacturers. So I think he wants to take some chips off the table, and I think also preparing for more financing deals of SpaceX, which is really burning cash here, as long as they haven't solved the problem with their new rocket propulsion technology.
That's an interesting story there, and one of those bellwether stocks is so important for the whole speculative space. You've talked about that nexus of Tesla and crypto, etc. So yeah, I have to watch that one closely. Tesla has been rolling over worse than the market in recent days. So you had Vestas out reporting today. You already covered that one. Disney also up today. Interesting. All these valuations. It seems like a lot more noise on these subscriptions, Netflix, etc. I wonder if that's going to impact their business. They became so. They went from dog to a great stock. Suddenly, during the pandemic, first the focus was on those cruise lines shutting down because of the pandemic, and then there was the subscription service that saw them just rocketing to an all-time high, multiples from the lows. So it's been all over the place. Now it's back down to where it was, sort of mid-pandemic outbreak. What's the deal here?
Yeah, what is the deal? I think there's just a lot of changes in the Disney model, business model. I think investors have a little bit difficulties mapping the future profitability from the business. As you say, there is still the whole cruises. They're pivoting to streaming. We got news out yesterday from one of the big survey companies that Amazon is actually losing quite a bit of Prime subscribers, and the Netflix is seeing a subscriber fatigue as well, and I think the expectation is that Disney will run into the same issues pretty quickly, as despite they're still ramping up their Disney Plus streaming business, and it's I've said it before on this podcast. It to me it seems like there is a general entertainment in video entertainment, or call it what you want, movie cinema fatigue, and that's of course a big business for Disney, and then these increasing input cost headwinds also pressuring Disney in different parts of the business. So and it is one of the top 20 stocks in the US. So it's really an important one for overall sentiment, especially in the entertainment industry. So it could have impact on Netflix, of course, and to some extent also Amazon.
Yeah, an interesting one to watch for sure today. Okay, let's look at the macro calendar. As of course, we've indicated heavily, US July CPI up today. I think the focus should be on the month-on-month core, but of course, if we print something wild on the headline as well, that could grab a lot of attention. The market, I think, is most poorly positioned for a very strong data point, and interesting to see given how much is priced on what the Fed is anticipated to do and beginning to roll over, et cetera, after December of this year. If it is a soft print, is it already sort of priced in? So that's the I think the market skewed towards reacting more to a hotter print than the other way around. We have the weekly inventories out. There's been a lot of there was a story I tweeted out earlier this week from oilprice.com, some surveys of people saying they don't see this lower demand levels that the official data is reporting. So an interesting tension there that can only be hidden for so long, you could argue, before the truth comes out in terms of the price. A 10-year auction up today. The 3-year auction yesterday was very successful. We're getting the most yield inverted yield curve, as measured by the 2 to 10 yield since 1982, almost yesterday, just missing by a couple of basis points, the lowest level from the year 2000 there. I think given our outlook on inflation remaining hotter for longer, we're going to get to record inversion levels relative to the early 80s. A couple of Fed speakers, neither of which are voters, but what is their message? The market has been ignoring the more hawkish message and disapproval of the market's interpretation of Fed actions. So I don't know how much they can move the needle. And yeah, that's really the key focus, I think. We'll get a couple other data points throughout the end of the week, but it is August. It's a thinner month liquidity-wise. I think moves and volatility could pick up quite aggressively if we are rolling over in terms of risk sentiment, and then we get a CPI number that doesn't play well with where the market is positioned. So that's what we'll be on the lookout for today. We'll see how things shake out, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.